If you work anywhere near petrochemicals, oil refining, or really any high-pressure industrial plant, you know the stakes are incredibly high.
Oh, absolutely. We're talking about massive reactors, enormous heat exchangers, all operating under just brutal conditions.
Exactly. Crushing hydrogen pressure and searing heat, sometimes well over 500 degrees Celsius.
And in those environments, there's this invisible threat. It's this slow-motion catastrophe that's been known about for, since the early 20th century.
And it's still causing failures. The catastrophic rupture at the Tesoro Anacortes refinery, that was a terrible, real-world example of this exact thing.
It was.
Okay, so let's unpack this. Today we are doing a deep dive into the material science behind mitigating high-temperature, high-pressure hydrogen attack, or HA.
Right, and our main source for this is a fantastic 2021 PhD thesis from the University of Cambridge. And what's great about it is that it wasn't just academic.
No, it was aimed squarely at moving beyond the industry's sort of experience-based safety rules.
Yeah, to use real experimental methods to find actual reliable solutions for the next generation of materials.
So our mission today is pretty clear. We need to get into the fundamental chemistry of how hydrogen actually destroys steel, why our current safety standards are, well, dangerously incomplete.
And then reveal some pretty surprising breakthroughs in material design that could really save lives.
Okay, so to start, we have to define what we're talking about. Because hydrogen attack, HA, is often confused with its cousin, hydrogen embrittlement, HE.
Right. And they are not the same thing at all.
Most people are probably more familiar with embrittlement, right? That's where atomic hydrogen just gets into the steel and makes it lose its ductility, makes it brittle.
Exactly. HE is about that diffusible, nascent hydrogen causing a loss of toughness. HA, on the other hand, it's much more physically destructive. It's a methane-based mechanism.
So the hydrogen isn't just hanging around. It's actually finding carbon inside the steel and reacting with it.
Precisely. The tiny hydrogen atoms get into the steel, find the carbon that's locked up in the alloying carbides, and react to form methane gas, CH4.
And methane is a much bigger molecule. It can't get out.
It cannot get out. So it forms these tiny high-pressure bubbles inside the steel, mostly at places like grain boundaries and other little internal cavities.
So you are basically creating thousands of tiny pressure bombs inside the metal itself. What's the ultimate result of that?
Well, it's two devastating and totally irreversible things.
Yeah.
First, carbon depletion. You're literally pulling the stabilizing carbon out of the steel's structure, which just weakens it.
Okay.
Second, the methane pressure itself physically inflates the steel. We've seen studies, one on C1095 steel, where it recorded a volume change of nearly 15%.
15%? That's huge. That's not just chemical degradation, that's physical destruction.
Exactly. And this damage, it follows a really insidious timeline. It's a two-stage process, which means a component can look totally fine right up until it isn't.
That's the scary part.
It is. The first stage is what we call the incubation period. This is where the carbides start to dissolve, the hydrogen gets in, and the little methane bubbles start to form.
But you can't see it. The mechanical properties, if you were to measure them, they wouldn't have changed much at all.
Not noticeably, no. The danger is completely hidden. But, you know, that clock ticks a lot faster if you crank up the temperature or the hydrogen pressure.
So it's this silent buildup.
Yeah.
Then what happens when that incubation period is over?
And then you hit the second stage, the pernicious growth stage. Now that internal methane pressure starts driving the growth of those cavities, making them bigger.
And once they're big enough, I assume they start to connect.
They do, especially under the external stress of just, you know, being in operation. They link up.
Oh. What's the mechanism there?
It's a mechanism called creep. Creep is just the very slow, permanent stretching of a material when it's under constant stress at high temperatures.
I see.
So think of it like this. The methane bubbles have already weakened the walls between them, and the creep mechanism is like this constant force pushing on those weak walls, causing them to collapse and join up.
And that's where you get microcracks that grow into a full-blown rupture.
That's how it happens, yes.
This whole invisible process makes predicting failure an absolute nightmare, which I guess brings us to the industry standard for avoiding it, the Nelson curves.
The Nelson curves.
Right.
Right. They're codified in API recommended practice 941, and they are the status quo. They're basically these experience-based graphs.
Experience-based.
Yeah. They define what are supposed to be the safe operating limits, so temperature and hydrogen pressure, for common steels like 2.25 CR1 mo.
But the thesis we're looking at makes it very clear that just relying on these curves is, well, it's dangerously naive. Why?
Because they're based on historical failure data, not predictive physics. We're constantly seeing them get corrected after something fails outside the safe zone.
So they're literally being edited by accidents.
Pretty much. The curve for C0.5 mohs steel had to be drastically downgraded, basically removed, because of real-world failures that shouldn't have happened.
Wow.
But the biggest flaw, the really critical one, is that the curves completely ignore externally imposed stress.
Which, as you said, is always there, and it speeds up the damage through that creep mechanism.
It dramatically accelerates it. It's a massive oversight.
Okay, that context is key. But just looking at the shape of the curves, it's interesting. Can you break down what the different parts of the curve tell us about what's going on chemically?
Sure. The shape basically tells you which reactant is the bottleneck, what's limiting the speed of the attack.
Okay.
So you have a vertical section that's usually at a high temperature but lower hydrogen pressure. Here, the reaction is limited by how much hydrogen is available.
It's hydrogen limited.
Exactly. And then you have the horizontal section that's at lower temperature but much higher pressure. Here, you've got plenty of hydrogen.
So now the limiting factor is the carbon.
Right. It's how easily that carbon can be pulled out of the carbides to make methane. The reaction becomes carbon limited.
So the whole game really is controlled by carbon activity, which leads us right into the next part where we look at the industry workhorse, 2.25 CR1O seal, and its fundamental weakness.
Right. And EP22 steel's whole defense against HA is based on one principle, using alloying elements like chromium and molybdenum to form very stable carbides.
So things like M23C6 and M7C3 instead of the really unstable summatite, which hydrogen would just tear apart instantly.
Exactly. So the whole mitigation strategy is about chemical stability. It's all controlled by what's called the carbon activity in the steel.
The lower the activity, the better.
The lower, the better. You want to lock up that carbon so tightly in stable carbides that the hydrogen can't get to it. And the thesis makes this crucial point. The closer a carbide is to its perfect thermodynamic equilibrium composition, the lower that carbon activity is.
So its stability depends entirely on getting the heat treatment, the temperature, the timing, absolutely perfect. And this is where the experiments on 2.25 CR1 NOMO found a really terrifying instability.
Yeah, this was the core of it. The researchers took samples and put them all through the same exposure, 500 hours at 525 degrees Celsius and 10 MPI of hydrogen.
But they had different heat treatments beforehand.
Very different. And they found that the molybdenum-based carbides, M2C and M6C, they held up pretty well across the board, good resistance.
But the chromium carbides, M7C3 and M23C6, they were the problem.
They were the wild card. Their resistance was all over the place, based entirely on that prior thermal history.
So let's look at the extremes.
Okay, so take sample C. It was tempered at 650 degrees for 50 hours, a pretty long, standard process. It was the most susceptible. After the exposure, its void volume fraction increased by two orders of magnitude.
Two orders of magnitude. So a 100-fold increase in damage?
100 times more voids, yeah. A catastrophic failure just waiting to its chromium carbides were just gone.
Wow. Now compare that to the best one.
Okay, that was sample E. It was tempered at a much higher temperature, 750 degrees, but for way less time, only 5 hours. And it had the highest resistance. We saw basically no noticeable depletion of its M23C6 carbides.
This is the core insight, isn't it? It's the exact same alloy, same hydrogen exposure. One fails, one doesn't. What was the deep chemical difference between them?
It was all about the thermal history adjusting the carbide's own chemical composition. That high temperature, short duration tempering for sample E pushed its M23C6 carbide much, much closer to its perfect thermodynamic equilibrium.
Meaning it had the ideal ratio of chromium to iron in its structure.
Yes, and that made it vastly more stable against the hydrogen attack than the carbide in sample C.
So this is about process control, not just picking the right material. A few degrees difference in the tempering oven can be the difference between a safe component and a ticking time bomb.
That's it. It proves the Nelson curves are fundamentally incomplete. They treat 2.25 CR1MO as one thing, but its history is everything.
And the research also showed that the damage gets way worse around any kind of structural vulnerability.
Oh, yeah. Applied stress speeds up bubble formation, which then speeds up the creep linking. And the little impurities in the steel, what we call inclusions, they turned out to be preferential sites for hydrogen to accumulate. You could see heavy, localized carbide depletion right around them. The attack starts at these weak points.
And there was a clear gradient, right? From the surface inward?
Correct. The carbides near the surface got hit first and depleted fastest, and you could see the attack front just marching deeper into the steel.
Okay, so we've got the problem. Standard steel is highly sensitive to heat treatments that are difficult to get perfect. The system is just fragile. So what's the solution? We need a material that's just inherently more robust.
And that's where we pivot to vanadium.
Vanadium.
Vanadium is the key. Its carbides are thermodynamically more stable than both chromium and molybdenum carbides. And just as importantly, vanadium also enhances the steel's intrinsic creep strength.
Ah, so it hits two birds with one stone. Better chemical stability against making methane and better physical resistance against the cracking.
Exactly. Which leads to the first major mitigation breakthrough from the thesis. A radical new approach using something called interphase precipitation.
Okay, this sounds cool.
It's a really elegant piece of materials engineering. So instead of relying on a long tempering process after the fact, they used a specific vanadium steel where the carbon and vanadium are perfectly balanced.
It's stoichiometric, right?
Right. 0.2C, 1.04V. And they use a process called isothermal transformation, IT.
What does that process do differently?
So as the steel's crystal structure cools and transforms from austenite to ferrite, the vanadium carbides are precipitated directly at that moving boundary between the two phases.
You're forming them in real time, right, as the steel itself is forming.
That's it. You create these perfect, regular, fine arrays of super stable V carbides right where you want them. You're building the resistance right into the material's fundamental structure.
And the results.
The results were dramatic. The IT vanadium steel showed superior resistance to HA compared to even the absolute best 2.25 CR 1 mL sample, that sample E we talked about.
And what was really remarkable was that the vanadium carbides showed no depletion at all, even when their composition was far from that theoretical perfect equilibrium.
That's the breakthrough. It means vanadium gives you this inherent robust stability that doesn't need that long, sensitive, hard-to-control tempering process that the chrome-only steels do. It's just more reliable.
But there was a big caveat, right? A warning about the process itself.
Absolutely. The transformation has to be complete. If it's not, if you leave some untransformed structure behind, it quenches down into this hard, high-carbon material called martensite.
Which is bad news.
Very bad news. The research showed this martensite was super susceptible to cracking and void formation. If you leave any free carbon for the hydrogen to find, it will.
Got it. Okay, so beyond that custom V steel, the research also looked at an existing alloy, HT10 steel. This was interesting because HT10 was already known for hydrogen resistance, but for a different reason.
Right. HT10 was originally developed for low-temperature hydrogen embrittlement, HE. It has an excellent capacity for trapping that nascent hydrogen before it can cause problems.
But this research found it's also really good against high-temperature HA.
It is. Superior resistance compared to the standard F22.
So do the traps that work for low-temp embrittlement also work against the high-temp attack?
No, and that's the crucial distinction. The high-temperature HA resistance was not because of its HE trapping capacity. It was because of the excellent stability of the highly enriched vanadium and molybdenum carbides that HT10 already contains.
So it's the carbides again, not the traps.
It's the carbides. And for this particular alloy, they found that a conventional quench and temper treatment actually worked better than the fancy isothermal transformation. So, you know, different materials need different solutions.
Okay, let's bring this all together. What are the key takeaways from this deep dive for you, the listener?
I'd say first, high-temperature hydrogen attack is fundamentally a carbon and methane problem. It's not just about hydrogen getting in.
Right. And second, the current industry standard, the Nelson curves, are dangerously incomplete. They completely ignore the crucial role of heat treatment history, which determines whether a steel is safe or not.
Third, vanadium is the superior mitigation element. It offers this inherent carbide stability that resists the hydrogen attack even when it's not perfectly formed, which is a reliability that chromium carbides just can't seem to match.
And finally, this novel technique, interphase precipitation in vanadium steel, gives us a real pathway for a new generation of hydrogen-resistant materials by locking up all the carbon safely from the get-go.
Yeah, it's a fundamental materials science breakthrough. It really establishes vanadium steel as a strong candidate to replace 2.25 CR10. That could save lives and protect billions in infrastructure.
But the journey from a lab breakthrough like this to an actual component in a refinery is a long one. The research proved the carbides are stable, but what kind of other testing has to be done before you could actually trust this in the field?
Well, the research itself points to the critical next step, which is concrete creep testing. We need experimental proof that these super stable vanadium carbides, actually limit that secondary failure mechanism, the creep-linking of the bubbles.
So when you put it under real-world load, does it still hold up? Do the voids still stay separate?
Exactly. Does the superior creep strength of vanadium steel really stop those cracks from forming? That mechanical validation, maybe along with some direct experiments to quantify just how much less methane these V carbides produce,
right.
That's the bridge you have to cross.
It's that final step from science to engineering.
It is. It just proves that fundamental science, no matter how clever it is, always needs major engineering validation before it can earn that trust.